Well, good afternoon or good evening, as it may be, depending on where you live in this great country. This is Dr. Stan coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out across America listening to us, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us today one of my best friends, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dennis, how are you today?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
All right. We're going to be talking about Dennis's book, Cover-Up. And, of course, this is a sequel to his book, 9-1-1, Prior Knowledge, and going into the background of what really happened on September 11th. And, of course, there's just so many unanswered questions about the attack on America. And then there are unanswered questions about the recent war with Iraq. Now, most people say, isn't it wonderful we won the war? And, of course, I completely agree with that. I wanted the war over as quickly as possible, but then I questioned the wisdom of the war completely, and I think that maybe when we talk about some of the things we're going to be talking about today, we may be able to get, hopefully, some of our listeners thinking and wondering and questioning what's really going on in the world today. So, Dennis, let's get a little bit into the background of what actually happened on September 11th and why there should be any question at all. After all, there were two hijacked planes that crashed into the north and then the south tower of the World Trade Center. There was one plane that went into the Pentagon, although a lot of people will try to confuse the issue of whether a plane went in or not. I'm convinced a plane went in. And then, of course, there was a plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. That's the scenario we all hear. So what's wrong with that? I mean, the government said why we never would have thought that anybody would ever hijack a plane and crash it into our buildings. In fact, Dick Cheney, speaking the Sunday after the attack, said, well, we knew an attack was coming, but we never, never in the world thought that this would happen. How would you respond to that?
Well, what I've done, and let me list some questions. Because when you originally were talking, you were saying there are various questions that haven't been answered. So as a prelude to my response to that, what I've decided is a lot of people are interested at the federal level on not only what's gone on with this war with Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, but they're still looking at what happened on September 11th. In fact, on Face the Nation, a few weeks ago, Senator Bob Graham of Florida, who's running for the presidency, literally called what was going on regarding September 11th a cover-up, was the word he used. And Bob Schieffer said, do you really mean that? And he said, well, yes. And so, if I could, let me just run through a series of, there's a fair number of them, but they're very short questions. Am I hearing the music?
You are hearing the music. We've got about maybe 20 seconds. So, we'll just hold these points until we get back with Dr. Dennis Cuddy, but much of this is covered, of course, that the background is covered in his book, Cover-Up. And, of course, why cover-up? Well, the question would be, why has the administration done everything they could to block an independent investigation? Why did President Bush suggest Henry Kissinger, of all people, to head that commission, a man who is known for his dishonesty? In fact, he can't even travel outside of this country readily. There's so many people who feel he should be tried for criminal charges. So why would he be the president's first choice? And we'll be back here in just a minute. And, of course, we'll take your questions here at Radio Liberty. Well, with us today is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're going to be talking about his book, Cover-Up. For those of you who don't know Dr. Cuddy, I consider him the finest researcher we have in the country. Going into the background of what's really going on behind the scenes, we carry his book, of course, Cover-Up, and his earlier book, 9-1-1, Prior Knowledge. But we also carry his book, Secret Records Revealed, the now is the dawning book of Road to Socialism. The globalists, his book on the NEA, his book The Timeline Under the New World Order, on education. All of these are available from Radio Liberty. But his latest book, Cover Up, I recommend to you because it's got so many points in it that are so important as we try to assess what's going on today. So, Dennis, why don't you go ahead and pick up this story of some of the questions that you would ask?
Well, now seems to be a critical time because both issues are coming together, what happened on 9/11, and then what's happened with this war with Iraq and how we got in there, that I would encourage your listeners, whoever their senator or U.S. House of Representatives person is, they need to ask these questions. Now, let's say for whatever reason that the last election was very close, and some of these people who are listening to you are strong supporters of President Bush, and they really don't want to get into criticism. The point is, no matter whether someone is a Republican or Democrat, we cannot allow questions to not be asked. So even if one doesn't want to criticize somebody specifically, these are the types of questions which we really should demand answers to, and I'll read through them quickly. First, who were the top Pentagon officials who on September 10th of 2001 suddenly canceled their travel plans for the next morning, the morning of 9/11, because of security concerns?
Now, of course, most people don't even know that they did cancel their program, their flight plans, but it was covered in the Newsweek magazine on both, what, September the, 14th?
13th.
On the 24th?
The 13th and the 24th.
Right, okay.
And that's something else. I'm glad you actually brought that up, because what generally happens is whenever you call a senator, or even if you call Newsweek, you get, in effect, what I got. And let me explain that, because oftentimes your listeners will make a call and say, what about this? And they'll say, oh, well, you know, Congress investigated the general subject, and they surely would have found something, and so that's the end of that. You as the listeners need to be very diligent and vigorous in your pursuit of this. For example, when I called one of the authors of a Newsweek article, his name was Mark Hosenball, and asked him if he found out who the top Pentagon officials were, he said no. And so I said, well, did you not ask who they were, or did you ask and they would not tell you? And he said, quote, I don't want to talk about it anymore, end quote. And so I decided to call Evan Thomas, who is the head of the Washington Bureau of Newsweek. He's also a co-author of a book called The Wise Men, about six powerful CFR members.
We're going to have to just take a quick break here. Well, no, go right ahead then.
Okay, and so basically when I asked him about it, Thomas said, well, you know, it's nothing to it. Congress investigated. Surely something would have turned up, and I don't believe, he said, in conspiracy theories. And so I was saying, well, Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco on that same date, September 10th, got a late-night call, not routine call, saying from his security people that he, Willie Brown, because he was supposed to fly from San Francisco to New York the next morning, the morning of 9/11, should he and all Americans should watch their air travel because something big was up. And Evan Thomas replied, well, maybe he just heard a rumor. I said, no, he either received the call or he didn't. And that was pretty much the end of what Evan Thomas wanted to say. Now, what your listeners need to remember is this. Newsweek is supposedly a very professional magazine. They're not supposed to print anything unless they have two or three sources and verified and managing editors review it, especially when it's something accusatory, like saying top Pentagon officials had some sort of foreknowledge of 9/11. Even if they made a mistake on September 13th in that article, even if, you know, the next day somebody from the Pentagon called them up and said, you guys don't know what you're talking about, nobody here had any foreknowledge, surely by the 24th, when they printed the second article saying basically the same thing with Evan Thomas's name and Mark Hosenball's name on it, surely by then they would have checked this thing out one side and down another. So don't let people, whether it's a senator or somebody from Newsweek, give you this sort of, you know, routine that, oh, well, Congress looked at stuff and there's nothing to it. You need to vigorously pursue this. I don't care if you're a supporter of Senator Kerry, a Democrat running for president, or President Bush. It doesn't matter. You have a right, and the families of the victims of 9/11 have a right to answer to these questions, regardless of party affiliation. But unless you, the listeners, vigorously pursue this with your U.S. representatives and senators, nothing's going to happen.
All right, fine. Well, of course, then, what sort of response, are people getting, though? Because, you know, we're being told, well, after all, the Senate's investigated it, and they would have gotten to the bottom, but would they really have? My understanding that an awful lot of things were not allowed to be brought out at the investigation.
Exactly. Second question was, where were the fighter jets on that day? It's a standard operating procedure. For example, 9/11, we already know Payne Stewart, the golfer, when his plane went off course, within 15 minutes, an F-16 was up there accompanying it to see exactly what had happened to this plane. So where were those planes on 9/11? Thirdly, a question is, where were the preventive contingency plans? That's important. It's important today, this very day, because if we had been attacked on the World Trade Center in 1993, which we were, and as you said, Dr. Stan, Dick Cheney admitted we knew something big and soon, surely a possibility for an attack would have been the World Trade Center. Where was the preventive contingency plan for a plane, let's say? Where's the military helicopter on standby alert? The reason that's important for all of your listeners to pursue is, let's say tomorrow, there was an attack with a plane, maybe not a 757, 767, but maybe a private jet. What if there was an attack tomorrow against, say, the Empire State Building or the tallest building in your home city, Detroit, Los Angeles, you know, wherever it is? Do we have preventive contingency plans? These are the types of things, regardless of whether listeners are supporters of Democrats or Republicans, they need to have answers to. Now, they don't have to give you the details of the preventive contingency plan, but just, you know, have some sort of knowledge that somebody's actually sitting down coming up with this stuff.
Well, you know, there's so many unanswered questions, Dr. Cuddy. First of all, on September 11th, why did the people, who were in charge of the South Tower tell the people not to evacuate the building? They could see the North Tower, people were jumping out, the flames, the smoke billowing out. And, of course, up on the top floor, the head of security at Morgan Stanley was telling everybody to evacuate the building. You got 1,700 people out. But, of course, at the other floors, everybody was told to stay at their desk, not to move. And yet they knew, because the Port Authority was in charge of this, they knew that the other hijacked plane was coming. Why wouldn't they have evacuated the building? Why wouldn't they have evacuated the Pentagon when another plane was heading towards Washington, D.C.? I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. Why were the doors to the roof locked so that nobody could possibly get out as they did during the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center? And then, of course, the passports. And I wish you'd touch on that story of the passports, because obviously this was planted evidence. And would you cover the things we've talked about, which everybody wants to ask about or should want to ask about? How could passports possibly have gotten out of those planes, the hijackers passported, and drifted to the ground where one of them was found adjacent to the World Trade Center and one of them was found adjacent to the crash site there in Pennsylvania? And I've always said the only way I can logically figure this happened was that the hijackers rolled down the planes on the airplane windows and threw them out before the plane crashed and incinerated. What's your response to that?
Well, you've brought up three things. Let me hit them each quickly. In the first place, regarding the South Tower, that's one of the points that Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband was lost in the second tower, made when she gave her congressional testimony. If they had just been told, let's say some of those top Pentagon officials who canceled their flight plans, even if they didn't know for sure that the attack would be the next morning by airplanes flying into those towers, if they had just said, well, you know, maybe there's going to be an attack this week, maybe some sort of hijacking, whatever, just the fact, just the knowledge that there could have been a terrorist attack would have alerted her husband and all the others in the second tower to immediately evacuate that tower once the plane had hit the first tower. The second thing that she brought up during her testimony, which was of interest to me especially, was that she said, how did our intelligence people know the details of a conversation between a couple of the terrorists a week before September 11th unless they were already being monitored.
Now, I think that for our listeners, that complete testimony is in my October newsletter available at RadioLiberty.com, and she points out that the FBI had was able to tell congressional investigators, or I don't know who they told, but certainly it's in the record, that they knew exactly what the hijackers were talking about a week ahead of time. Well, if they didn't know who the hijackers were, if they didn't know, who to be watching, how would they know what they said a week beforehand on a cell phone?
Exactly. And in terms of evacuating the Pentagon, as Kristen also said, this plane came way after the first two planes hit the World Trade Center, and as she put it, the plane was flying loop-de-loops over Washington. So there was plenty of time for an evacuation to occur there as well. In terms of the passports, what's curious about that is both at one of the World Trade Center sites nearby, just a couple of three blocks away, they found, and at Pennsylvania, at that crash site, they found a couple of passports in very, very good condition. And they weren't passports of, John Smith, your average individual, but they just happened to be passports of the hijackers at both locations. And what your listeners need to remember is that there was literally an inferno, not only at the World Trade Center, but supposedly in Pennsylvania, never mind the 8-mile trail of debris, which we're supposed to ignore, but supposedly that plane as well went into a steep dive and hit the ground, and everything, including some of the black boxes, were even incinerated, so we can't even tell what voice recorder said on some of these things. Yet these two plastic paper passports seem to survive almost intact.
And, of course, they were up on the FBI website, and you were good enough to send me a copy of the FBI website. And then, of course, they suddenly disappeared off FBI website, almost as if somebody said, "If you think maybe this is too much, even the dumb Americans might be able to figure out that there's no way that these passports could just survive." And, of course, the passports survived just happened to be, the only ones that survived happened to be those of the hijackers.
Yes, that's an amazing coincidence. Also, we're supposed to believe, another question is, why did the CIA think Mohammed Atta, the ringleader of the hijackers, was important enough to be monitored from January to June of the year 2000 in Germany, but the next month, when he comes over here to flight school, we're supposed to believe that he was not important enough to be monitored?
And, of course, the other thing that really bothers me about that is that Mohammed Atta, of course, is going on a suicide trip. So what does he do? He packs a suitcase. Now, you would think that if he wanted to pack the suitcase with all of these things in it, talk about his radical Islamic beliefs and the plans for what's going on, he would have taken it on the plane with him so it would be destroyed rather than leaving it in the car where it would be found. But, of course, this master planner, who packs the suitcase very carefully and then leaves it in the car where it will be found, along with all of his notes about suicide bombings. And you have to ask yourself, what's wrong with this story?
Well, not only did he do what you said, he left it in the car in the parking lot. I mean, he didn't park it, 5 miles away and take a cab or something. He left it so it could be found very quickly. Now, why is that troublesome to me and you and others? Well, what if, for whatever reason, his plane was delayed? And, what if some of the other hijackers took off? Oh, my goodness, there are these hijacked planes, and then they close down all airports and start searches. They might find his luggage there while he's sitting on the plane. Surely he wouldn't have wanted that to happen.
It's sort of like Tim McVeigh driving to, to bomb the Oklahoma City. And according to his story, he lit the fuse 5 minutes before he got to the building. What happens if he can't find a parking place?
And he leaves that little dangling license plate so he gets pulled over afterwards.
Right. Well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. All questions that we need to ask, and, of course, we hope that you'll give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you right here at Radio Liberty. Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money, that'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within
the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-based education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hofker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for outcome-based education. Once you understand what they're doing with your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to tell you about the Big Berkey water filter. The Big Berkey certainly is a standard. It's been used for 150 years by missionaries throughout the world and people going to these terrible, terrible places where there's poor water. And but what it is, it's a stainless steel water filter. It'll filter about 25 gallons of water a day through ceramic filters packed with activated carbon. And, of course, it'll take out the bacteria. It'll take out certainly many of the heavy metals and many of the minerals there that you don't want, some of the pesticides. This is an excellent water filter, and of course, ordinarily these are $279. We sell them for $239 plus $10 shipping, and if you buy it through us, you get a video or a 4-tape set that we produce. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for a Big Berkey water filter. Now, they're available in every state but California and, of course, Iowa. They're portable. You can put them in your home. You can put them in your RV. You put them in your camper. The Big Berkey is a wonderful, wonderful water filter. But as they say, it's not available in California or Iowa. However, the Berkey Light. And this is a transparent. It's made out of the same material they make bulletproof glass out of. It has a different type of filter. They call the Black Berkey filters. And these, of course, purify the water. They're even more effective than the standard Berkey filters. And, of course, they'll take out MTBE. They'll take out literally all the bacteria. They'll take out many of the chemicals and heavy metals that you don't want. Now, there are a few things that won't take out, like fluoride and arsenic, and you can get special post filters for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light to do that. They're special filters, but they don't come routinely. The Berkey Light is $199 if you want to get lights on it. That's an extra $60, but we have a Berkey Light. And, of course, you buy that to us, you get a 4-tape set or a video. You can see them at our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now we have with us Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about his book, Cover Up. And of course, when you read this book, you realize, of course, that much of what happened on September 11th, you have never heard. Now, the story about the Defense Department officials who changed their flight plans on the 10th of September is covered in Newsweek magazine on the 13th of November, pardon me, 13th of September, the 24th of September of the year 2001. And of course, the people who wrote that story don't want to talk about it. Have they been threatened? Well, I will tell you certainly the story of Bill Gertz. I'm going to let you tell the story of Bill Gertz because I'd sent that to you right after September 11th. Dr. Cuddy, why don't you tell the story of Bill Gertz and, of course, his scoop on the Operation Bojinka, which had posted on his background or had been picked up by United Airlines 2 months beforehand, talking about the plan to hijack planes in America and crashed them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, the Sears Tower, and, of course, the Transamerica building in San Francisco. Why is that important? What was involved with that?
Wants to see, again, not just Newsweek, but this is Beryl Gertz, who's a very prominent person with the Washington Times, what's happening. To be charitable, I don't know exactly the motive. It may be that these people have sources, high-level sources in the CIA, Pentagon, wherever, who, if they get too explicit or push too hard, will dry up as sources. And so it appears that there's a backing off going on. Bill Gertz, a couple of months prior to September 11th, issued what was called a backgrounder, and it shows up many places, Northwest Airlines, little flight magazine, and a number of other places. And what he had said was in Project Bojinka that there would be hijacking of planes as part of the plan. This was on Ramzi Youssef's laptop computer, one of the leader of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing that was picked up over in the Philippines. And it said they were, just as you indicated, they would hijack airliners and fly them into all of these buildings, Pentagon, World Trade Center, Transamerica Building, Sears Tower, and so on. And I thought to myself, wow, this is, really something 2 months before the event happened. And so when he came out, Bill Gertz came out with his book, Breakdown, afterwards, and they only had one of the buildings listed. I called him and said, what about those others? And he said, oh, well, that was a mistake.
He said that his book, he talked about attacking the CIA building, did not in any way mention the World Trade Center.
Yeah, just like the Washington Post, his version. There's just the one building. So in my book, Cover Up, I actually put the quote by a Mr. Garcia, who I think his name's Rafael Garcia, who was a head of a computer company over in the Philippines, who deciphered the Project Bojinka for the Philippine government there, and he said, no, it was all of them. All of them were mentioned, the World Trade Center and Pentagon, Transamerica, and the Sears Tower. And so, once again, you have this sort of backing off of the pursuit of what happened.
Didn't you actually call Bill Gertz and ask him why 2 months before that he had the greatest scoop of all time,
right,
and then he didn't mention it in his book?
And he said just a mistake, sort of like Newsweek says, well, I guess Congress investigated, didn't find anything, so that's it, and we don't believe in conspiracy theories. My problem with that sort of answer is even if one doesn't believe in a conspiracy theory, that should be pursued, because even if they said, Dick Cheney said something big and soon. Okay, well, we had an NSA, National Security Agency, intercept, or, the intercept of 2 days before September 11th when Osama bin Laden's calling his stepmother, and let's say at the last minute they got the word, and it was not specific. Let's say it was sometime this week, and let's say maybe a hijacking. Not for sure, but maybe. Right, that's important to pursue because, as Kristen Breitweiser said, even if the American public had known that, just that there might be some sort of terrorist event, some hijacking, a whole lot of lives could be saved. And that's why one of the other questions would like your listeners to raise is, how come President Bush and the rest said nobody could have, quote, imagined 9/11 when we already had federal reports like September of 99 saying Al-Qaeda's martyrdom battalion could hijack airliners and crash them into these buildings? Why did they say nobody could have imagined these things would happen?
Well, maybe they figured that nobody would be listening to programs such as this, and they would be listening to ABC, CBS, NBC, and continue to get dumbed down. Yes, and even Fox, the so-called conservative network, really does discuss these issues and bring them out. So you're hearing the two sides that they want you to hear, but never the truth. We're going to be back here in just a moment with more discussion with Dr. Dennis Kelly. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting
in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war. Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I simply want to mention to you that if you are concerned about the cost of health care insurance at the present time, and of course it's just going up and up and up, there is an alternative. It's called MediShare. You have to be a born-again Christian, Catholic, or Protestant. You have to, of course, be willing to work with this program, but they give you excellent insurance, $120 for one individual, two individuals, $230, and a family of three or more for $297 a month with a $5 million balloon insurance policy there behind it. But it's really not primarily insurance. It's primarily a sharing, a Christian sharing, and, of course, it's a unique a program dedicated to wellness. If you'd like to know more about the MediShare health insurance health program, health sharing program, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we want to mention the Miracle 2 Soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them. We will tell you that many of the people who use them tell us about the wonderful results that they have had, and all we can do is tell you that there's a soap, and there's a moisturizing soap, a lotion, and a gel, and then a neutralizing solution, which some people say helps their heartburn. It's a very alkaline solution. If you'd like to know more about the Miracle 2 Soap products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we'll pack it off to you. If you'd like to order an introductory set of the Miracle 2 Soap health products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I think you'll be very happy that you actually try these products. I hope you get as good results as most of the people who've used them have and tell us about. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and if you'd like to call, if you have a question or comment, we're discussing Dr. Cuddy's book, Cover Up. And, of course, he tells many of the stories we're talking about, his conversations with Bill Gertz, his conversations with the editors of Newsweek magazine, asking him if they bothered to follow up on their stories about the Defense Department officials who canceled their flights for the 11th of September on the 10th of September, and how nobody wants to talk about it. It's almost like, well, what happened after the assassination of President Kennedy. Everybody, or so many people, were afraid to tell the truth because after people started dying, like Dorothy Kilgallen and so many of the others, why the message got out, you better not talk about what happened with the murder of President Kennedy. And you want to get the story of that, we have a wonderful book. It's called Regicide. It's based upon the papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was Deputy Director of Clandestine Operations for the CIA, and tells you why the CIA killed President Kennedy, how they killed President Kennedy, and who killed President Kennedy. The book, Regicide, available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But right now we're talking about the book Cover Up, a great book we recommended to you by Dr. Dennis Cuddy, our guest today. Well, Dr. Cuddy, of course, as you go through all of these various issues, whether it be the fact that Mayor Willie Brown was warned the night before, that obviously somebody had warned people in the Pentagon about this, and then the obvious cover-up by Mr. Bill Gertz, who, when I asked him about that article that he had written, didn't even remember it. When I pointed it out, he said it was a mistake. How could it be a mistake? That's exactly what happened. There was a plan, we know from 1995, was picked up in the Philippines, and it was even talked about at the trial in 1997, where some of the people were actually on trial for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center and for the other terrorist activities that were planned in New York City. So they even talked about Operation Pachinko then. How could it be that nobody knew about Operation Pachinko?
That's an excellent question, and they're not really interested in pursuing it. The people at Newsweek, when I mentioned Willie Brown, they seemed totally disinterested even following up with him to check on it, which makes me suspicious about whether they've been read the Riot Act or however you want to put it. But then when you go through and you look at other things, for example, immediately after September 11th, to add to the suspicion about the whole thing, how come it is the FBI rounded up about 20 or so members of the Bin Laden family in this country, took them on a plane down to Texas briefly, then over to the Saudi Arabian embassy in Washington, and then out of the country very, very quickly. At the same time, they were detaining over 1,000 Middle Eastern males in this country. You would think maybe one of these Bin Ladens might have some information that was of use to us, but apparently it was more important to get them out of the country and safe.
Have you noticed, Dr. Cuddy, that the government will not release the names of any of those people where initially they were detained, because they say, well, we don't want al-Qaeda to know who they were. After all, we don't want to know how we'd broken up their cells. And to this day, they won't let the al-Qaeda people know who these men were, even though many of them have been released. And I think the major question is, how did we know within a day or so of the attack who all these people within the Islamic terrorist cells in the United States were, if we weren't monitoring the Islamic terrorist movement in the United States? And we're told, oh, we couldn't infiltrate it. It was the Church Committee's fault. It was Senator Church's fault. The investigation of 1977, we weren't allowed to investigate. That's why we had no idea what was going to happen. And yet, of course, I think you have a copy of one of the articles we have out of USA Today that commented that we had infiltrated the Islamic terrorist movement, and we knew they planned to hijack planes and fly them into the buildings, including the World Trade Center. I'm sure I sent you that article, didn't I?
Absolutely. Yes, it indicates that we had infiltrated al-Qaeda the same way that the people down in Phoenix, the FBI fellows who wrote the memo, said, you know, golly, if we just known to check on those flight schools. Well, I also put in the cover-up an article saying that we knew about those flight schools years in advance, and we had been checking on them years in advance. But to answer your first question about what happened there, the FBI agents, Robert Wright and Barry Carmody, they said that they had the ability to literally stop this event 9/11 from happening if they had been allowed to go forward. They had been following the money trail, but they were prevented from doing that. And then Robert Wright made an interesting comment. This was last year, I think May 31st. They had a press conference, and Wright said something very interesting. He indicated, and this is not an exact quote, but what he indicated was, a lot of these people had been monitored. They did know who they were, but apparently some of those people at the FBI just wanted to have a list who they could round up after the terrorist attack, which is really a condemnatory statement that he made.
Well, of course, you know, if you know there's going to be a major attack and a lot of Americans are going to be killed, you would try to head that off, unless, of course, you specifically needed that to change America, to change our foreign policy, to change the psyche of the American people. And, of course, I know you've read the report. It's up on the website at newamericancentury.org. It's not something I said or they said, but it's what this little group of people who took over our government when George Bush became president, this project of the New American Century. And if you go to their website, newamericancentury.org, and look in their Rebuilding America's Defenses report, you will find out that I think it's on page 50 or 51. They talk about the necessity of, you know, we're not going to be able to transform our military to what we want it to be unless there is, should be a catastrophic and catalytic event like another Pearl Harbor. And that report came out just 12 months before the September 11th attack. It came out in September of the year 2000, and of course the September 11th attack was September 11th, 2001. So there were people who were looking or waiting or hoping for something so we could transform American foreign policy, and sure enough, why that occurred. And, of course, in that initial little group were people like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Jeb Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, even some of the Christian leaders were part of this group that were planning, 25 people, 11 of them from the Council on Foreign Relations, planning back in 1997 on taking over our government and, of course, changing our foreign policy and creating a new international order that America would lead for our profit and our principles, whatever those might be.
And in case some of your listeners think you're stretching it a bit when you say about taking over our government, I'll just read a couple of quotes here. The head of PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, is William Kristol. He's editor of the Weekly Standard magazine. And Rush Limbaugh, who's a strong supporter of President Bush on his May 29th program, was referring to an L.A. Times piece, an editorial titled Temper the Course on Iran, meaning we were talking then about going into Iran after Iraq. And Rush said, quote, the L.A. Times may as well be saying that poor old Bill Kristol is running the administration from the editorial pages of the Weekly Standard, and he may be, for all I know, end quote. And then to give an example, the Weekly Standard on May 12th, William Kristol wrote an editorial saying, quote, we must also take the fight to Iran with measures ranging to covert operations, end quote. And then the next thing you know, the Bush administration puts out a report or information saying they are considering covert operations in Iran. So these are a couple of examples, including Rush Limbaugh, a supporter of President Bush, who seemed to indicate that this outfit really may be running the administration. And Ted Koppel on Nightline one night interviewed a professor, Ian Lustig, who said exactly that. He said, this group is now in control of the White House, end quote.
And, of course, that was on the 5th of March of this year, that, and we actually have that video, and we actually have the transcript of that video on Nightline on the 5th of March of this year. But, of course, you know, I think that one of the things that our listeners should watch very closely is Iran. These so-called spontaneous demonstrations of 10,000 students. Now, I wonder how many people honestly think that you have a 10,000-strong spontaneous demonstration. These things are all carefully contrived ahead of time. And this is exactly how back in 1953 we toppled the President Mossadegh with Prime Minister Mossadegh, who had been democratically elected in Iran. And, of course, we toppled him and brought the Shah to power. And then, of course, in 1979 we toppled the Shah and we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And now it would appear that we are organizing demonstrations over there. And the President has said to the leaders of that country, you have to treat the demonstrators with respect. Did we treat the anti-war demonstrators in the United States with respect? I don't think you... these people are intent upon overthrowing the government. Now, I think the Ayatollahs are terrible, and I don't think we ever should have brought them to power. But I think that the American people need to understand that we are planning on toppling the government of Iran, and we're planning on toppling the government of Syria and of Lebanon, and then, of course, of Saudi Arabia. And a lot of people will say, well, that's good. How would you respond to those people who say, well, it's a good idea. These people are behind the Islamic terrorist movement. We know that Saudi Arabia has been funding this Islamic terrorist movement all along. So what's wrong with toppling these governments so we can stop Islamic terrorism? How do you respond to that?
Well, it's rather disconcerting in terms of, if nothing else, hypocrisy. Because on the one hand, we foment revolutions and provide for demonstrations in Iran. Same thing in Yugoslavia. We put up, I remember reading a New York Times report where we funneled $5 million in there to the political process, to opposition groups, to Milosevic, and everybody says, you know, this is great. At the same time, we were complaining about Chinese money coming in to support Bill Clinton, how this was outrageous. And I'm not for that. I'm just saying how, on the one hand, is it horrible, but we can do the same thing in these other countries and overthrow, as you said, General Schwarzkopf's father getting the $10 million secret slush fund from Alan Dulles and the CIA back in 53 to overthrow that government, then, you know, Diem in Vietnam, and the whole bit, and the CIA has been responsible for assassinating people. Osama was a CIA agent. Saddam Hussein was an assassin for the CIA, a six-member assassination team in that country back in 1959. And so we go around killing people, and we're supposed to say, well, you know, that's okay. to topple these countries. How would we feel? For example, let's say Noriega in Panama. Well, he had violated domestic law, U.S. domestic law. Okay, let's say that China said President Clinton or President Bush had violated Chinese domestic law, and therefore we could grab him and, you know, haul him off to a Chinese court or something. How would we feel about that precedent that we're setting?
I think for our listeners out there, the story of General Schwarzkopf's father involved with the CIA in toppling the government of Premier Mossadegh is found in the book Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which we carry. It was written by Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Carol Quigley. The story of Saddam Hussein being a CIA assassin in the 1950s comes from a book, Unholy Wars. It was written a decade or so ago. And, of course, no one can question the fact that we financed and backed Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s when, of course, he was at war with Iran, at war with the government that we'd put in power there when we toppled the Shah of Iran. What's wrong with this picture? But my response to those people who say, look, we've got to do something about all this Islamic terrorist movement that threatens us, and we do need to do something about it. We need to cut off the funding which is coming from Saudi Arabia. There's a $1 trillion lawsuit against the Saudi princes that funded Al-Qaeda both before and after 9/11. And, of course, who is defending the Saudi princes? Who's their law firm here in the United States, Dr. Cuddy?
It's Baker & Botts. Baker meaning James Baker, the former Secretary of State and the Florida vote counter for the current President Bush.
That's the President's lawyer. I mean, why is the President's lawyer's law firm defending the Saudis who have been financing the Islamic terrorists unless, of course, nothing as it appears to be. Let's go to Jim, who's calling. Hi, Jim. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Massachusetts, Dr.
How are you hearing us?
Oh, I'm on the Internet right now.
All right, fine, because we're having real trouble with our shortwave. But go ahead. A question, a comment.
A question, I guess, for Dr. Cuddy, I guess, and yourself, Dr. Stan. Would you conclude, based on what we're seeing in these, these spontaneous demonstrations in Iran, that they're CIA provocateurs that are provoking these demonstrations just to be on camera, on cue at the right time, and so forth?
What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Cuddy?
It seems too coincidental to not be. Like I said, the demonstrations in Yugoslavia just popped up at the very time that we're putting in the $5 million or so. Plus, we've seen this before in South America. I mean, the same thing happens. Now, there's always, you know, some sort of cause. Like the students' fees going up, and they always use a cause, but the impetus seems to be too timely to not be associated with that effort.
And I think if you had seen the Nightline interview on the 5th of March between Ted Koppel and, of course, William Crystal of the American Standard, of the Weekly Standard, who is, of course, the chairman of the PNAC group at the present time. And he said, we're going to topple Iran. If you believe that those are spontaneous demonstrations, you probably believe that the anti-war demonstrations that occurred all throughout the world before we attacked Iraq were spontaneous. They weren't. They were planned. They were staged. They control both sides. They create demonstrations anytime they want to. And all the indications are what's going on in Iran is an organized effort to topple that government. And if you've been listening to our program regularly, you know that's been our plan for a long time. Anything else, Jim?
No, I guess that's just it, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, if you're out there, I think we're just about out of time for more questions. But, of course, let me point out the plan is to topple Iran, to either topple or take military action against Syria and Lebanon, and then, of course, to destabilize Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, we'll control the oil of the world. But, you know, whenever there's an old law in physics, whenever there's an action, there's always an equal and opposite reaction. And I believe that we are in World War III. And I believe, of course, first of all, that Russia and China are not going to allow us to get away with this. And then I believe that we have to look at the spiritual aspect of this. And I believe that, is America still a Christian nation? America which defies God at every turn? We're just about out of time, Dr. Cuddy. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, picking up on what you just said, nothing will be accomplished without prayer. So we must remain diligent, not be panicky, but we must be vigorous in our pursuit of the truth and demand answers of our elected representatives to these questions, or else it's just going to get worse and worse.
Well, I think it's going to get worse and worse, but I think that we have to be involved, and we have to try to educate others, and, you know, we have an obligation to try to make people see the spiritual aspect of this geopolitical struggle. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. As Barry Goldwater said, when he's talking about the trilaterals, they not only want political, social, and economic control, they want ecclesiastical control as well.
Amen to that. Well, God bless you. Thank you so much, Dr. Cuddy. Remember, the book is Cover Up. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's a book you really must read if you want to understand what happened on Tuesday morning, September 11th. 2001. Bye-bye. God bless you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The book that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, Due to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going to the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. I just want to tell you about a couple of the other things we carry. Of course, one of them would be the Phonopoly. Phonopoly is designed to teach your children and your grandchildren how to read phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically, how to spell phonetically. There's been a deliberate plan to dumb down the children of our country, and they've done a pretty good job of it. And, of course, if you look at the latest reports on reading scores, they say, well, the fourth graders are up a little bit, but the 11th and 12th grade are down once again. Well, these are the children getting ready to graduate, and their reading skills are declining. It's all part of a long-range plan. And if you want to thwart and help us thwart that plan, think about getting a Phonopoly set for your children, your grandchildren, maybe even for yourself. You'll be able to read and spell. You'll learn the 12 basic rules of the English language. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Phonopoly. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there are concerned enough about what's happening to our country that you'll want to get an Institute of the Constitution started in your region. And, of course, it's basically videos, three videos, with each one with four lectures on it. And, of course, you're going to actually have 12 lecture series on the Christian history of America, one of the most carefully kept secrets in America today. If you are concerned about what's going on and you'd really like to do something yourself, why don't you go ahead and call the Institute on the Constitution at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And consider setting up an Institute of the Constitution at your church, in your neighborhood, or in your home. Get your friends in, and of course they'll become very, very enthused at the idea and the realization of the Christian heritage of America that we never talk about today. Well, this is Archer Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and by radio and by Internet and by shortwave and by satellite. We are reaching people, and we have almost 55 outlets every week. A lot of them are just half an hour, but at least people hearing the truth they've never heard before. If you'd like to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Of course, we hope that some of you will want, of course, to go ahead and get one of our newsletters. We'll send you one free. Our March newsletter will give you the truth about the attack on Iraq. And, of course, the April and May newsletters deal with the SARS epidemic and the other new diseases which threaten your health. And you better learn about this. And then, of course, we hope that some of you out there will be concerned about what the future holds and want to make sure that you have adequate supplies, know how to look after yourself. If you'd like to get a ready reserve food catalog, just call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd be glad to send you one. We're now, of course, offering the MediShare, which is a health sharing program. That's not a health insurance program, although there is a up to a $5 million insurance policy after you've cost some $50,000. But it's a unique idea on health sharing that focuses on wellness rather than simply treatment. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to find out about this alternative system of providing health care for yourself and your family. And then, of course, we want to mention Phenoply. If you don't have a Phenoply set for your children and your grandchildren, why, shame on you. You need to actually get a Phenoply set so they can learn to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. You need, of course, to think about getting the Robinson Homeschool curriculum on 22 CDs that will take your children from the grammar school all the way through high school graduation. The lesson plans are there. The lectures are there. Most of the textbooks are there. The only textbooks you have to buy are the Saxon textbooks. And, of course, you can get Phenoply and the Robinson Homeschool curriculum simply by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Phenoply is $139.95. The Robinson Homeschool curriculum, the entire curriculum for 12 years of school is $199.95. It's all on CD discs. And, of course, we want you then not to let the children to get on the computer, but to get the lesson plans and help them, of course, to get the quality education they're going to need to survive in the times that lie ahead. And then if you haven't yet set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community and would like, of course, to learn more about this, where you can actually learn about America's Christian heritage and, of course, teach others in your community, call the Institute of the Constitution at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And tell other people about our website, because that's how we're getting our information out, the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And then, of course, this is the time when we, of course, ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so please remember that we'll be back with you again tomorrow at the same time. And until then, why, may the Lord be with you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. For our freedom, our future, our families are under attack today.